big city taking a nap. Slow down, it's Sunday, life's a ball, let it fall right in your lap. If you've got troubles, just take them out for a walk. They'll burst like bubbles in the fun of a Sunday in New York. You can spend time without spending a dime, watching people watch people pass. Later you pause, and in one of the stores there's that face next to yours in the glass.
Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. That is the voice of the one and only Libby York, one of my favorite singers, and she was reminding me when she sat down about 35 seconds ago that she appeared, as they say, at the first anniversary of that old morning show, which was held live at God knows what time at the Billy Goat. It was a live broadcast. I don't know, Aubrey, you didn't do that. Oh, it was Jimmy who did it. Jimmy engineered that. Libby, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Yes, it was very early in the morning for cheeseburgers.
Well, you were a jazz singer. It's not early in the morning, too. It's kind of like
But coming, I remember it being great fun.
Coming home time. What do you think when you hear yourself sing?
Oh, like most singers, I rarely listen to myself, you know, rarely.
It's like me reading stories.
You know, once you've spent all this time in the studio recording it and, you know,
making it right.
Everything as perfect as you can make it, I really don't want to hear it again. But I'm glad other people do.
Oh, I'm so sorry, because we're going to play a lot of your music tonight. We're going to play your latest, we're going to play most cuts from your latest CD, Memoir, which is a very, very interesting package. But since you're on for the whole hour, do you remember the first music you ever heard? I was trying to think about it downstairs. I don't.
You know, I do remember, in my home, my folks both played piano and sang and played a lot of Sinatra, Rosie Clooney, Perry Como. You know, they were jazz fans.
What did your parents do?
They were both Northwestern graduates, and my dad was a management consultant, and my mom stayed at home and took care of us,
like
you know.
Like a lot of moms.
Like a lot of moms, but very, very had her own life. Interesting, intelligent woman, mom.
You're an only child?
No, I have one sister.
What does she do?
She is out in Oklahoma. It's kind of a long story.
Drilling for
oil. So she's drilling for oil,
A millionaire drilling for
oil. We're waiting for her.
She's a wildcatter. She's a wildcatter. When did you come to music in any kind of serious fashion?
Boy, you know, I always sang in school. I went to Sullivan High School. I had a wonderful girls' choir at Sullivan that I remember loving singing, but it took a long time for me to figure out that you could kind of pursue this as a career.
As a so-called career.
A so-called career. A so-called means of making a living.
Did you sing at home when your parents would play?
Yeah, sure. I would sing at home. And my dad used to sing with the big bands when they came through Northwestern.
Really?
In fact, the family story is that Big Noise from Winnetka was written about my dad and his friends.
Cause is that right?
He was from Hubbard Woods. But who knows? That could be apocryphal.
Where'd you grow up? What neighborhood?
Rogers Park.
In Rogers
Park? Yeah, went to Sullivan High School.
What grammar school?
Gale. If I started out at O'Keefe on the south side.
Yeah.
And then Gale School, a long time ago.
You didn't park yourself in Chicago for keeps, did you?
No, I've had what my mother used to call a peripatetic lifestyle. Went east to college at American University and ended up staying on the East Coast for years, many years.
And did you start singing out there?
I did, yep. We had a restaurant called the Back Porch Cafe in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware.
Great name.
Yeah. Well, it was on the back porch of an old house. It's still there 42 years later. If people ever go to Rehoboth, they know of the back porch. In fact, we were named, by Delaware Magazine, some of the 50 most influential Delawareans of the past 50 years for starting this restaurant. You know, we were the only ones that didn't have boardwalk French fries and had really farm to table.
Who is we? Who started the restaurant?
I had two partners, my then husband and our chef partner who lives in Sydney, Australia now.
Wow. Give me some background on the restaurant. You just guys were drinking beer and said, hey, let's start a restaurant? Or
boy, we had been out to the West Coast and we're in Santa Fe and kind of, you know, this is, I'm talking 74.
Yeah,
so
sure,
it goes
sure,
back there.
Sure.
And just things came together and we opened this place and it was just a hit immediately. And it's still there 42 years later. It's amazing.
Who runs it now?
Some of the people we hired
in
the beginning are still there, yeah.
Wow. But in college, what did you go to college for? What was the grand idea to please your parents?
I was a political science major, you know, and it didn't take long after graduation to figure out there was no way of making a living as a political science major, at least not for me. And, you know, we were kind of exploring different ways, lifestyles.
Well, it's the early 70s. I mean,
yeah, you remember that.
I do indeed. I do indeed. And you're thinking you become a political scientist and you can fix the problems of the world.
I mean, since then, I must say the political science has come in handy dealing with musicians.
Oh, no question.
In some ways.
No, well, and the politics of clubs and the politics of music, which you've been fighting, not against all the time, but it's a tough, the music business is a tough, ever-changing business. Did you sing at the club?
I have since sung at the club. I started bus to New York and taking vocal lessons, and I got some gigs in New York before I really even knew what I was doing, you know.
What spurred you to do that? What was there a catalyst for you making that decision?
You know, it's such a good question.
Singer?
I loved the music. I loved the Johnny Mercer tunes, the Gershwin tunes, Frank Lesser, Comden and Green. I mean, you know, the great American songbook.
With your incredible training from the Sullivan Chorus, is that right? And you decided to make a leap and go to New York?
I was enchanted with the idea of being a singer in New York.
It's an enchanting idea. There's no, that's a very romantic idea, don't you think?
And I think it wasn't so much about being a jazz singer. I just wanted to do that music. You know, it really was the music that propelled me to.
Wow, that's great. We are spending, I am spending this, and so are you, ladies and gentlemen, this entire hour with Libby York to talk about her career and her music. We've got her out of college. We've got her living in Delaware, but taking the bus up or down to New York. But she is performing upcoming June 7th at Jazz Showcase to sort of, is this a formal CD release party?
No, it's not a CD release party. It's just a special event with some great musicians. Jeremy Kahn on piano, Neil Alger on guitar, Kelly Sill on bass, and my special guest is vocalist Paul Marinaro.
Yeah, so, who's really, this is going to be something.
It's going to be
two
a fun
shows,
night.
Two shows, 8 and 10. We will keep you totally, totally informed on this. We have to take a little break now, but I'll be back with Libby York and we'll see where she first sang in New York. But first, I'll tell you this. It's your Chicago TV tradition. The Memorial Day game on WGN-TV. The first place Cubs welcome the Dodgers to town at 4 o'clock. That would be tomorrow on WGN-TV. We'll be right back.
I don't believe in fretting and grieving. Why mess around with strife? I never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life. Some find it pleasant dining on pheasant. Those things roll off my knife.
That's Libby York. She'll be at Jazz Showcase for two shows on June 7th with a number of great players. We'll tell you more about that as the hour goes on. You can get a ton of information at LibbyYork.com. That's LibbyYork.com. We had her in Delaware, where she's running a restaurant and going up to New York, but that was not your first business venture, was it, Libby York?
Well, since we're full disclosure
honesty,
here,
yes,
we're talking about the 70s on the break. Yes, for a summer or two, we had a head shop.
And was
so
it,
your listeners will remember a head shop.
Oh, yeah,
some of
will.
Them of a certain age.
I think, I mean, many of them will remember with great fondness, too. Don't kid yourself. So the business was successful enough that you and your then husband decided, well, we can have a restaurant. What kind of restaurant was it? What did you serve?
You know, all fresh food, you know, nothing fried. It was really farm to table. It
God,
was
you
what,
guys really were hippies, weren't was, you?
Yeah,
wow.
We really were. Alice Waters was doing the
sure.
same thing at Chez Panisse in Oakland around the same time. Mm-hmm. But in Delaware, you have all these beautiful farms. They would bring us these gorgeous vegetables. And
was it fun? Was it fun for you? I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the creating of it is very exciting.
Sure.
Because you're creating your own little world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did that for 5 years, but then...
But you would take a break during those 5 years to bop up to New York?
Well, we started going to Key West in the winter.
Yeah.
Seemed like a good idea.
Life. Yeah.
But yeah, then I was starting to get serious about. Actually, I met a guitarist in Key West who had a steady gig in New York, and he said, "Well, if you ever want to come sit in with me," so well, that's all I had to hear. I had a sublet on the Upper West Side, and you know.
So you really gave it. You gave it a full shot.
I did.
You moved
yeah.
in and went and did the club scene. You were doing auditions, or
yeah, auditions. Yeah, in fact, with this guitarist Franklin McCare, we. I think we had 3 songs in our repertoire, and we auditioned and got the gig. And then we had
what club was it? Do you remember? I don't even know.
It was called the Horn of Plenty down in the Village.
Yeah. And what did you think? I mean, were you at all scared, nervous, anxious?
Oh, yeah, all of the above, yeah. I'm sure, you know.
But the first time you got on stage and you sang a song and people clapped, what did that feel like?
Well, great. But I remember early on just kind of wishing the audience would disappear so that I could just sing, you know. It really is the doing of it. That's
important
that's
for you.
That's the draw.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've seen you on stage. You're now seem incredibly comfortable on stage. There may be something roiling around in you, but...
Well, now, you know, I've been doing it long enough that, I feel pretty comfortable. And it's, you know, to have an audience that is loving those old songs and appreciating the swing of the music and working with these great musicians, you know, that's
See,
the
interesting.
Fun.
It's interesting. If you're there in like the mid to late 70s, starting out in the scene in Greenwich Village, was it odd to be doing the Great American Songbook? Were people expecting you to be doing Dylan covers or something?
Well, not really, because it's interesting. My first gig in New York, I answered an ad in the Village Voice from a band called Swing Street, and it was an 8-piece big band.
Nice.
And they were doing, you know, Ellington, Gershwin, yeah. Cole yeah. Porter. So I think this music has never died. It's always been around. And even though the popular music of the day was Dylan or whatever, yeah. Joni Mitchell,
sure.
you know, a lot of
sure.
great stuff, Carole King.
Yeah, no question.
I think the Great American Songbook, the quality is so high that it's there and people recognize that.
Yeah, know? I'm trying to think of Chicago in that era. And if there were, you know, except for someone like, you know, Buddy Charles, or I guess Kelly's was still
yeah,
in operation,
Buddy was great.
There were probably not as many venues to explore the Great American Songbook in Chicago as there might have been in New York.
I think New York still is kind of, you know, the hub.
No, no question. How long did you stay there? How long were you there?
I was in New York about 15 years.
Wow.
Bounced around from, I really moved there in 81.
Yeah.
And it was impossible to get a lease on a place. So I got a 6-month sublet here and a 4-month sublet here. And I would move in a taxi cab, you know. But it actually was really good because I really learned the city and, you know,
when you
lived
really,
in Brooklyn
and,
for a few
and
years.
And you really had to learn the club, the precarious nature of the club business, too. I mean, New York's a bath by fire for a young singer with no resume, basically.
Right.
And coming in there, any sexism for a young, beautiful woman? No, seriously.
Yes. I mean, even within the musical community, you know.
Yeah.
Sure, and the whole girl singer thing.
No question. Sure.
But that's just something you just deal with.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part of it.
Well, and you must have collaborated with all manner of players, as they say. You know,
that was the great thing for me coming up in New York, because the people that I worked with and recorded with, not to this day, are, you know, top in the world.
Yeah.
Jazz musicians, you know.
One of the other things is you could not have been making very much money.
No.
And at some point you probably realized, well, I may never make very much money doing this. The joy seems for you, Libby, or to have never worn off. I'm sure there have been frustrating days and frustrating years, but it's a tough road.
Yeah, it is a tough road. You really, I've heard it said many times, if you think you can do something else, better do it. You know, you have to definitely be motivated. I mean, any art form, I think, is like that, right?
Yeah, I agree.
You don't do it for the money. I always had, in the beginning, I always had a little day job. I would do be a cater waiter, you know, most of the actors and a lot of musicians had. Oh, and I worked at Angel Sound in Times Square, and this is really going to date me, but they were manufacturing cassette tapes.
It doesn't date you. People remember what those are.
You remember cassette tapes?
Yes, of course they do.
And so something flexible so that if you had a gig, you could say, I'm not available this day or this night.
Well, did you ever think, what did your parents think about all this? You're still a young woman. You're a young, beautiful woman living alone sort of in New York, trying to make it at a jazz singer. Your parents are both professionals. What did they think?
You know,
were they ever like, Libby, come on, come home.
I'm sure. Well, they never said come home. I'm sure they probably had their times when they were, you know, worried, concerned about me. But they were really good about letting me do. I think they trusted me enough to think, well, she's not going to go off the deep end. I don't know.
There are. I mean, that's an interesting point you bring up. There are a lot of ways in that world to slip off into the deep end, aren't there? I mean, there are all manner of seductions.
Sure. And just, you know, the lifestyle. I remember one of my piano teachers saying, well, is this what you want to do as a lifestyle? And I had never thought about it that way, but it is, you know, the late nights and, all that entails. So some people fare better with that than others,
But there's also something, you have to admit, incredibly attractive about that lifestyle, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean...
there's a freedom to it. There is that whole, especially in a place like New York, that whole late-night jazz club scene.
Yeah, one of my favorite videos on my YouTube channel is Adam Gopnik, who writes for The New Yorker and wrote Paris to the Moon. He's a jazz fan, and he ended up writing the liner notes from my Here With You CD. And it's this beautiful introduction that he did for me at the Metropolitan Room in New York about no better feeling than being in a jazz club in New York and or Chicago and about to hear some good music. And that part's really fun.
He's a good writer, too. Adam Gopnik is a very, very good writer. I'm spending this whole hour, and so are you, with Libby York. Libby York will be performing June 7th at one of, to my mind, it's so nice that Joe Siegel in his later years found what I think is the best jazz showcase he's ever had, don't you?
God bless him.
Oh, it's such a great
room. All these years. Mr. Jazz Master, Joe Siegel.
That's right. It's in the whole Printer's Row neighborhood at 806 Plymouth Court. Just go to Libby's site. Go to LibbyYork.com. You'll get all the information you need. We're going to get some news now, and then we're going to continue on with Libby. We're going to get her out of New York, figure out why she left New York. She's now living here. But that New York time sounds just, it really sounds wonderful. And you learn a lot.
And, you know, I keep going back, too.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. Because it's in your blood.
Though now and then your problems fall within the errant mate department, forget the transatlantic call. Don't notify the State Department, for when on foreign shores I am, very truly yours I am.
Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, and my guest, Libby York, who's singing right there. Not live. She's not singing live. I've never made a performer, especially a jazz performer, sing live on the radio. I may have made you at one point, but I didn't know what
no,
I was
No, I don't
doing.
Think you've made me.
I didn't know what I was doing then any more than I know what I'm doing now. Libby will be performing June 7th at the Jazz Showcase with Jeremy Kahn, Kelly Sill, Neil Alger, and Paul Marinaro, who's a great, great vocalist. And then you're also going to be on July 14th in Evanston, right?
Yes, on Bastille Day. Steve Rashid has a great series, Live at the Whiskey Lounge. And that is live, streaming live on another radio station.
I don't care. That's
on
fine.
WDCB. And that's with Neil Alger. Again, on guitar, and Joe Policastro on the bass.
That's great. Steve Rashid's a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
Great. Now he's an entrepreneur,
right.
A musical entrepreneur.
Great. He's kept that the series going. It's a nice bass.
So in your years, in your 15 years in New York, Libby York, you say to yourself, I am a working jazz singer.
Yes.
When do you say that? At what point? You know, you're young, you come to New York, you get an apartment, I'm going to go play the clubs. At one point do you say to yourself, if someone asks you, do you say with confidence, I'm a jazz singer?
I think when I got that gig at with Swing Street.
I thought,
wow. Because we worked all around town and, played for dances. We played actually for the opening of South Street Seaport.
Oh, neat.
That felt like, okay, this is officially it,
And as were you taking vocal lessons or piano lessons, or were you taking lessons, as many people do? I think people assume that, once you've sung a song and made a CD, you never have to keep working at it.
Oh, you always have to keep working. I had taken piano lessons early on, and then after I was already performing, went back and got some coaching, because suddenly you're singing, few nights a week, and it's important to use your voice correctly. And
sure.
Had to kind of double
and you were
back.
And you were just basically winging it from having learned at the chorus at Sullivan High School, for God's sake, right?
I mean, I really learned on the bandstand.
Yeah,
There weren't really the wonderful jazz programs in the colleges like there are now. I learned by doing. But, something to be said for having a little, a good teacher.
Well, and also something to be said for being thrown in the pool, too,
yeah.
Metaphorically, and learning to swim. When did you cut your first CD or first record? Was it a record?
That was the last time I sat in this studio with you was, I remember it clearly, it was very early on a Sunday morning, 1999, with Joni Pilato.
Oh, good old
and
Joni.
Sparrow, I think, was here.
Yeah, he's always with her, yeah.
That was my first CD on Southport Records called Blue Gardenia.
That's a good CD.
I learned a lot from Joni and Sparrow. First time
they're
in
lovely
the studio,
people.
You really don't know what's going on. But
yeah.
Then you learn more. The second one, Sunday in New York, was on Blue Jazz. And then by the third one, here with you, I thought, wait a minute, I can be the producer,
Yeah.
I can hire the radio guy and the, PR person. And so the last two, I've produced myself.
part of the reason you probably did that is the insane changes in the music business. I mean, every performer I know, and it, much like every writer I know, is just bedeviled by what's happened to the biz.
Yeah, it's totally different. I mean, hardly anybody buys CDs anymore. I mean, we do, on the gig, I sell them, but it's all on iTunes and Spotify and downloads.
Whatever has intrigued me and troubled me a bit about that, especially for performers who are as thoughtful and interesting as you are, you don't just create a CD by tossing up the names of songs and however they fall is the way they're going to be on the CD. There's kind of most of the best performers try to create a musical narrative.
True.
In what they do.
Yeah, that last cut you played was the verse to a song called When in Rome, which was written by Cy Coleman with lyrics by Carolyn Lee. And it was actually the guitarist, Russell Malone, who suggested doing that song. I was kind of thinking about songs that meant a lot to me early on in my life. And a couple of them were really with Frank Derone in mind.
He was the great.
Somehow in high school, I had Frank Derone's record and June Christie, Something Cool. And they were the two I listened to like crazy. And now I've...
Now you know Frank.
I got to know Frank. I got to know Joan. And he was a real inspiration.
When you choose a memoir, is such an interesting CD because all of these... songs have a meaning for you. You can't, I mean, the liner notes do a sort of good job of doing it, but they're all important somehow in your life, and you bring a great deal of heart and soul, if I can borrow that phrase, to them. And that's one of the sad things about the way in which people listen to music now. It's like picking up, you know, Moby Dick or something, and flipping, read like one page of chapter 8 and then one page of chapter 2, and you're like, what is this story? There is a story to everyone. Memoir has thanks for the memories, too.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, Bob Hope's.
Yeah,
theme song.
I mean, don't you think that's a terribly underrated tune simply
Absolutely.
Because it's so identified with Bob Hope and it's become kind of a musical cliche?
I love singing that song, and it was something that my folks played around the house, you know. Thanks for the memories. It's a beautiful song.
Aubrey, keep that in mind. We'll play when Libby goes, sort of walking her out of here at about 3 minutes to 10. We'll play Thanks for the Memories because she brought it up. How'd the first two CDs do, and did you think that for yourself, Libby York, was another step on the road to... You haven't been very pragmatic about in a careerist kind of way, have you?
No, I haven't been very pragmatic. I mean, you kind of, you know, go where the spirit moves you, you know, a step at a time.
Yeah.
I can't say I've had a 10-year plan.
Or meteoric.
Or meteoric, no. But I do remember the first time Blue Gardenia started being played on the radio and getting good reviews, and, you know, it's very exciting.
Well, one of the other things is I keep recommending that you go to Libby's website because it's a very easy website to get to, libbyyork.com. You can hear about her. She's playing in August. She'll be at the Fourth Presbyterian Church on Michigan Avenue. Playing a free concert, but she's at Jazz Showcase June 7th. She's up in Evanston working with and for Steve Rashid on July 14th. But you can also, you will see all these fabulous accolades about you. Her smoky voice will appeal to Diana Krall fans, but she is very much her own woman. That is from the Times of London. Reviews important. Commercially.
Oh, it's always wonderful to be recognized. You know, the first New York Times blurb and the New Yorker and all the jazz magazines, the Downbeat. Sure, because that kind of reflects people who listen to a lot of music and know what they're listening to. And
what would you tell before I'm going to talk to you after this short news break about what the concert's going to be on the 7th? What would you tell a young if there's someone at Jazz Showcase on June 7th who walks in there for either the 8 or 10 p.m. show and says to you, Libby York, you're my hero. You're my hero. I've heard you sing. I really admire your career. I'm 22, and I want to be a jazz singer. What would you tell someone like that?
Oh, boy. Well, most likely, if they're 22 and want to be a jazz singer, I bet you they've had some wonderful teachers in their college program, mm-hmm. I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the good thing about the younger singers. They're really schooled so that then they can teach. And the whole
cycle continues.
Yeah, it helps keep the music alive. As far as personally, you know, just don't
get your hopes up.
Well, I wouldn't say that. No,
yeah,
but
I would say
go for it. But don't let rejection or what seems like rejection, you know, stop you. Again, it's something you got to want to do it for the thing itself.
Well, and obviously, I hope you ladies and gentlemen listening out there, you obviously sense Libby York's lifelong passion for this music.
And that's a blessing, really, to have something that you love. I mean, I always have a list of great songs that I haven't done yet that I'd like to do. You know, the repertoire is so
endless.
Endless.
Bottomless.
And it's like our gift to the world in the 20th century, I think, you know.
You are a great one, Libby York. We'll be right back after a short commercial break. We'll talk a little more about this upcoming show at the Jazz Showcase on June 7th. Just go to LibbyYork.com. You can hear stuff. You can see her face. You can see her CDs. You can read all about her. We'll be right back.
I don't care where we're going, just as long as I'm with you.
Oh, that's sweet.
Put it there, pal. Put it there.
Well, listen, old chump. I'll be just like your horses, and I'll stick to you like glue. Put it there, pal. Put it there.
You travel around the world, my friend, playing your cornet.
Yeah, I'll go almost anywhere.
I think you've heard enough of Libby York on the show so far to be intrigued enough, if you've never seen her before or heard her before, to go to the Jazz Showcase on June 7th to hear her perform. What's that show going to be like, Libby?
Well, we won't do the one you just heard, because that was a duet with Warren Vache, the great cornetist, and I think there's no one else I can do that with. The old, you know, From Road to Utopia, the Bob Hope Bing Crosby song. But we are going to do some of my favorite songs. Some are newer, some are older. We've got Gershwin, we've got an Abby Lincoln song called Throw It Away that I love.
Yeah.
Paul and I have worked up a couple of duets, which are going to be fun.
Yeah.
And the guys in the band just swing like crazy, so it's going to be fun.
It's going to be joyful. It's going to be
joyful.
It's going to be what you do. You will do this for the rest of your life, will you not?
As long as the voice holds out.
And how's it holding out?
Well, you know what Gypsy Rose Lee said, I have the same thing I've always had. It's just slower and lower. So all of my keys keep going lower and lower. But that's why I love seeing, Marilyn May, the great singer, is 88, I think.
Yeah.
Tony Bennett.
Well, I remember good old, and, you know, Audrey Morris was out all the, she was out all the time.
So it's heartening that the voice, as long as you keep yourself healthy, can keep going.
And Julie Wilson. And there are a number of those things. Any regrets, Libby York? You seem to have lived your life the way you wanted to live your life. I'm sure, I'm not talking about minor regrets like, you know, the first husband or something like that. But, I mean, any regrets along the way? I mean, there have been, you know, in anybody's life there are ups and downs. But you seem to have followed your own call.
Well, I think I have. You know, I don't like to look backward much. I like to move forward.
Good philosophy.
I could probably come up with a few regrets, but I don't.
Call me later. Yeah, call me later.
Think about it.
But
much.
Tonight,
I'd
when
like
she
to
leaves
just move
here,
forward.
Well, tonight when she leaves here, she's going to the jazz showcase with some old friends.
Yeah,
some friends
from New York are at the showcase. Their last set is I think starting at 10. So I'll make some of that.
That's great. Why don't we end with what do you want to hear? What song were we talking about?
Aubrey,
do you remember? Aubrey's got it.
She
Libby York, you are a hero of mine. Have fun at the showcase, honey.
Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you for that whole hour.
What makes me treat you the way that I do? Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There's nothing too good for a man that's good and true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? I bought you gold cufflinks for Christmas and a diamond ring. Great big Cadillac car and everything. It's love makes me treat you the way that I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? What makes me treat you the way that I do? Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? There is nothing too good for a man that's good and true. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? I make you eggs every morning with apple butter on your toast. Praise your manly charms from coast to coast. It's love makes me treat you the way that I. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? Good to you. There's nothing too good for a man as fine as you. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? I gave you that trip to Paris
went to Venice too. Those Armani suits sure look good on you. Love makes me treat you the way that I do. Gee, baby.